one who waters have one purpose, and they will each be rewarded according to their own labor. For we're co-workers in God's service. You are God's field, God's building.
Okay, this is a familiar passage that probably everybody in here, we always say, well, we're just planting the seed and God's going to produce. And that is correct. And that's what we're going to talk about today. John Stott summarizes it this way. To evangelize does not mean to win converts, but simply to announce the good news irrespective of the results. So that's what we're going to kind of talk about in the next few weeks, is planting that seed and how to talk to people. And then we won't worry about the results. God takes care of the results. So we'll start in our handout. A major tendency is for congregations to interpret Jesus' command to go to all the world to mean go to foreign countries to evangelize while ignoring the portion of the world surrounding them. They do this because it gives them feeling of doing the Lord's work as their rationale. The real reason is it requires less personal effort to send money than the personal effort to work with the lost in their own geographical area. As long as this interpretation of go into all the world prevails, the church in the U.S. will not grow. Lifeway Research gives 9 reasons Christians fail to evangelize. Many don't know what evangelism is. We have few evangelistic role models. Some church members aren't convinced about lostness. And Tom Rainer adds to that, too many church members aren't concerned for the lostness around them. Some churches have provided no evangelism training. And because of that, they eliminated evangelism programs due to lack of interest, but didn't replace it with anything else. Also, we need to be more intentional about evangelism training in our churches. 5, fear of the unknown halts our efforts. 6, we've gotten over our salvation. 7, pastors or church leaders aren't taking the lead in evangelism. And Tom Rainer puts it pretty blunt. If your church is not evangelistic, look first in the mirror. And where does it start? At the top. Any organization, for it to be successful, starts at the top. We really don't know many lost people anyway. If you grew up in the Bible Belt, we run into this problem a lot. You know, just about everybody goes to church somewhere. But that is not true all over.
But Lynn?
Yes, sir.
We expect our leaders to be that person to start things, but one pebble makes a river.
Exactly.
We can all be that one.
Now, I didn't say elders is the leader. As the leader, I said sometimes it takes a leader, and that can be not necessarily an elder person. Yeah. And finally, we don't care about non-believers. We just don't care. We're kind of complacent about it. Growing up in the Church of Christ all my life, my main evangelism training was going out with my dad and using one of these.
Oh, yeah.
How many people has ever used one of these?
With my dad.
With my parents.
What this is a built-in record player and film strip projector. And you put a record on the back and play the audio, and there would be a bell in there that rings, and that's when you advance the film strip. And my job was to advance the film strip. And just for the heck of it, this is pitcher Jewel Miller. So that's basically my evangelism training.
Do you still have that?
I do not. I grabbed this off the internet. They've actually now converted Jewel Miller film strips to DVDs, and you can play the DVD. My dad did buy a DVD at one point. So, what qualifies as an effective evangelistic church? An effective evangelistic church. The conversion ratio of less of 20 to 1.
That's a definition?
Hold on. Oh, let me back up. I didn't put this in my notes. What is the conversion ratio of adult baptisms per year? In other words, how many adult baptisms do you have per 100 members.
I wish this was a bigger thing.
The effective evangelistic church has a ratio of 20 to 1 adult baptisms. That's what's considered an effective evangelistic church. The normal conversion rate is 85 to 1. So every 100 members, you have 85 new baptisms a year. So where does Destin fall into this? How many baptized adult members would you say we have?
That's a big
number. Huh? I know it's a big number, but that's...
85 to 1 would be for every...
85.
Yeah, one every out of your 85. If you had 100, be one. Yeah.
1.3.
Yeah. To be evangelistic, you'd have 20 to 1. So where does Destin fall in this? How many baptized members do we have, roughly?
Each year?
No, right now.
Oh, in the church.
Right now.
It's round to 60,
700.
100? Under 100.
Under 100? I used 100 just for the heck of it. And that should give us five adult baptisms a year. Now, that doesn't count children because they kind of come up through the ranks. We're talking about adult conversions per year. Are we hitting that?
What are we?
I don't know what we are, but we're under that. Yeah. Maybe the elders of Betsy can tell you, because she keeps up with that.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not saying we won't hit it. I'm just saying that's where we are right now. So, give you an example, though. Southern Baptist Convention, their baptisms are down 30% in the last 10 years. That's as a denomination. So.
We noticed this in Bob this year, in Bob's Cup Convention we go to.
Yeah.
Down in Gainesville.
Yeah.
I've also noticed we always have baptisms every year, and there was none this
year. Yeah.
So, and last year it was down also.
Yeah. That's not just Church of Christ figures either. That's religion total in the United States. So turn to Matthew 9:36 through 38. That's going to be our scripture text for today. We're going to unpack it. Following Todd and his sermon, this is like four verses above where he started. So if you stuck your bulletin in where he was, you should be okay. Well, I have to have people out. All right. So we're going to unpack this, and if you can follow along. If we want to be effective, we need to ask God to give us the heart that Jesus had for lost people. We see his heart in Matthew 9, verse 36, when he says, he saw the crowds and had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. Then 37 and 38, he goes on to say, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. Charles Spurgeon says verse 38 is the one that weighed on his heart the most. Presumably, Jesus and the disciples saw the same scene, which was the approaching crowd, but Jesus saw them with different eyes than the disciples did. First of all, Jesus saw the great need of lost people in verse 36. The disciples probably thought as they did on another occasion, which is Matthew 14:15, when the needs were overwhelming, the disciples told Jesus to do what? Send them away. Exactly. But Jesus saw them differently and he felt compassion for them. Jesus saw lost people as helpless, according to the NIV and English Standard, and Amplified said distressed. The word means troubled or vexed. It points to the load of problems that people apart from Christ bear. Then Jesus saw lost people as harassed or dispirited. The word means downcast or thrown down. It points to the utterly helpless and forsaken condition of people who are lost in sin without the Savior. Does anyone know what happens to sheep when they get turned over on their back?
Die.
Why?
They can't get up.
They die. You're right. What?
That's how I feel sometimes.
Oh. According to Philip,
Leroy knows not to go up.
What goes up comes down, right? Philip Keller, in his book, A Shepherd's Look at Psalm 32, describes how sheep can get turned over on their backs and not be able to get up by themselves. Such sheep are called cast or cast down sheep. These sheep frail at the air with their legs, but they can't get back on their feet without the aid of a shepherd. Left in this condition, helpless and vulnerable to their enemies, they will die after a few hours or days. Jesus saw lost people as sheep without a shepherd. Do hurting people wear neon signs blinking, "Love me, I'm hurting, love me, I'm hurting"? No, they do not. And we probably have some visit us just about every week, but we kind of step over them to get to our friends, to talk to our friends. Yes, ma'am. Gave him a what?
A tip.
Oh, okay.
Gave him some cash.
Yeah.
And he said, and then her mom gave me this, and he pulled out of his pocket one of the little prayer cards.
Oh, cool.
And she had given him a little prayer card. He works up at the front desk, and if anybody needs some uplifting and spiritual guidance, it's him.
Yeah.
And I saw that in the fact that it was tucked in his pocket, and I just thought, you know, just that little thing was so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't do that enough. We're mm-hmm. always afraid to give out their prayer card or talk to somebody.
Yeah.
You just don't know who you're touching.
Right. Absolutely. And that's kind of what we're talking about in the next few weeks, too. Yeah, is that. The second one. Oh, anybody have any questions about Jesus saw the great need of lost people?
You quoted a verse about in Psalms
32.
Thank you.
Yeah, Psalms 23.
Oh.
Psalms 23.
You read it out as 32.
Oh. Sorry. That's the name of the book, A Shepherd's Look at Psalm 23.
Okay.
By Philip Keller. Number two, or second. Jesus saw the great harvest of lost people. That's in verse 37. He said, "The harvest is plentiful." This was an important concept that Jesus wanted his disciples to grasp. Does Jesus say this basic same statement other places? The answer is yes.
We knew that. We just wanted to
know. On another occasion, after speaking with the Samaritan woman at the well, he told the disciples in John 4:35, "Lift up your eyes and look on the fields, that they are white for harvest." He also repeated it again in Luke 10:2, when he sent out the 70 for ministry. And he told the Apostle Paul to go on preaching in Corinth in Acts 18:10, "For I have many people in this city." There was a harvest waiting to be reaped. The harvest doesn't depend on our techniques, but on God's sovereign purpose. He has planned a harvest, and he calls us to get involved as reapers. Jesus said that the harvest is plentiful. It's God's Holy Spirit's job to open hearts to the gospel, Acts 16:14. It's our job to go into the harvest field and seek to reap a crop.
To reap a crop or plant a crop?
We reap. We get the results. We don't cause the results. We see the results. Yeah. 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 If you got a field of wheat and the wheat is ready for harvest, we go out and harvest. We get the results of what God has produced. That makes sense?
Really?
Yes, sir.
I don't understand where you're going.
Okay.
When the good news reaches those lost, right?
Uh-huh.
They turn their hearts over to the Lord.
Right.
It's just a matter of like the message being delivered correctly.
Right.
Then we don't have enough people in sales because we don't ask for the deal.
Right. We don't close it.
Yeah, we don't close it.
Yeah.
We offer it, but we don't close it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Alan says that, right, Alan?
Yeah.
You don't sell any houses unless you ask.
You have to ask continuously.
Three?
Of course, my friends all say that he can sell ice to an escort.
Two or three times within the first hour, you know? It's not a consistency.
I heard minimum of three closes. You try to close them three different times. Yeah. And sometimes it takes seven.
Wow.
That's what I've heard. So, number three, or C, Jesus saw the great need for workers for the harvest. And again in verse 37, Jesus first used the metaphor of sheep, but now he's using harvest. Someone say something? Am I hearing an echo?
She's mumbling.
Oh, okay. The sheep and the shepherd show man's need met by God. The harvest and the workers show God's need met by man. God uses saved people to save other people. Jesus' viewpoint is that of a farmer who has a great crop ready for harvest, but he doesn't have enough reapers or harvesters. The Lord has chosen to save lost people through those whom he has already saved. He could have used angels who probably would have been more competent than we are, but he chose to use us. The plentiful harvest means that there is a need for more workers. But here's the kicker. If you are one of Jesus' sheep, he wants you to see yourself as a worker in his harvest. And if you're thinking, but I'm not called into full-time ministry, you don't understand. The workers in the Lord's harvest are not just those in so-called full-time ministry. Rather, they are those who have tasted of God's salvation, telling others of what he has done for their soul. Jesus wants you to open your eyes and see the great harvest around you so that you will be a worker reaping souls who need the good shepherd. So to be like our Savior, we need to see, as Jesus saw, the great need of lost people, the great harvest of lost people, and the great need for more workers in the harvest of lost people. We need to do as Jesus did. He ministered to people's needs and he prayed for more workers. Questions or comments? Yes.
One of the videos that we'll be watching in the Wednesday night class, the speaker makes a comment that says the greatest amount of work is not done by the greatest speaker, by the most active leader. The greatest amount of work is done by those who are committed daily, weekly, monthly, and do little tasks and little things.
Yeah.
As a regular part of your life. And the ratio between the two, the super active and the regular us, I mean, it's more than 100 to 1.
Yeah.
There's many, many times more stuff done, not in being a full-time minister, but just living the life.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, it's a daily thing, too.
Yeah.
Anybody else? Okay, the last one, you've got a letter A, you need to change that to D. It didn't convert over and I didn't catch it till I'd already printed your handouts out. So.
Hey, Lynn.
Yes, sir.
So, John Cookney, our newest surgery patient, you know, Bob went to the effort of baptizing him.
Right.
And this last week he said, you know, none of my church friends could take care of me.
Really?
The church has stepped up.
Yeah.
Big way.
Yeah.
Take care.
Yeah.
So that's a great thing.
Yeah.
For us.
And hopefully because of that, and we're not doing it just because of this, but he will take that and talk to his Czech friends.
He will.
So, and others we hope, but yeah. But we're not doing it just for that.
He's never been in a culture that it
works. Yeah.
He's been here 20 years, and that's never been a part of his life in this country.
Right.
And he doesn't understand it. It's very mysterious and baffling to him. So, you know, like somebody else said, you don't understand the impact that you may have in someone's life.
Yeah.
And he said he's been to big churches.
Oh, really?
But he never got the relationships.
Got lost in the crowd.
Lost in the numbers until he came here. And Christy stepped out.
Yeah.
In a very brave manner.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Bernard inspired me. I handed out extra bookmarks for Easter. You told us to do that.
Okay, Alan.
Jim?
This morning, a couple behind us with a Nashville. When we got through, got ready to leave, shook hands with him, he said, I'd just like to tell y'all what an uplifting experience it is to come to church here.
Wow.
And I think that kind of offsets some of the rumors about people in Nashville not coming here.
Yeah.
Yeah,
don't knock us till you try us. All right.
And if you knock us, let us know and we'll try.
Yeah, exactly.
We can do that.
Yeah. Don't go around spreading rumors if without giving us a chance. Yes. Yeah.
We went to church in Edmond, Oklahoma, and we were on the visitation team. We were more than one team, by the way. And we, thank you. We would meet at 6 o'clock and have a meal, and we would split up in couples, and we'd go out and visit.
Yeah, I've been in churches, we do that. Y'all used to do that here, didn't you, Bernard?
Yes, we did.
Yeah. Yeah. Can't do it.
Let me venture on that subject. Who in here is going out and visiting? I can think of a few people in here who have done that. Not in a concerted effort, but it still does happen.
It does.
That do visit. It's not that we don't do it.
Yeah.
It's not as organized.
It's not a program.
They say, okay, you guys go here to this person. They told us who to go visit.
And I'm not trying to put words in Bernard's mouth, but a lot of times he'll bring a card to me, someone across the bay, and says, can you go visit this person or something?
I still do that. And one thing I would like to encourage everybody to do is when you notice that there is someone that's missed service, especially if you missed twice in a row, call them. We have directories. Just call them and say, we miss you. For me, I don't need a conversation. I just need for somebody to say, I missed you. That means a lot. It means so much more than sitting there and having a whole conversation. But I have had people to tell me, nobody called me. What I do is I'm going through my phone and I see a name of a person. Oh, I forgot about this person. I take it. I call that person right then. Or I may call the person I was looking for, and I go back and call that telephone number. But guys, that means so much to those individuals when they miss church and nobody called them.
Pat and I had two emails this last week. It was so nice.
Really was.
Yes. It means a lot.
You didn't say
they were really into Pat.
Yeah. Well, y'all didn't hear this, but he just told her she had not seen them. So he read them and then deleted them or something. Didn't even tell you. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Our cards, or you know. Congregation in Opelika, Alabama, which for y'all who don't know, it's a twin city to Auburn. Yay! But the church produced postcards. We had a picture postcard, front side had a picture of the church building, and on the back half of it, you know, for writing. And we gave those out to the members to send, you know, all it has to do is, hey, Jeff, I missed you today or last week or whatever. You know, it was just simple postcard. Yep. Who?
I was just going to say real quick that at the last congregation we had those in the back seat, yeah, the pew, and they could be encouragement cards or prayer cards. But what they would do is, if you filled one out during services, they take them up to, you know, wherever the secretary was or whatever, and she'd mail them all out.
Okay.
During the week.
Yeah.
And the thing was, out of the blue, during the week, you'd get this card, and I was really close with a lot of the teenagers.
There. Yeah.
Constantly get "I love you, Mom," or just like something like, or when my kids would have a birthday, all the teenagers would write a happy birthday card and they'd send them all out at one time. But you know, those little things were very
important. Yeah.
And you're
Okay, let's move on. We got a little bit more to go. Jesus ministered to people's spiritual and physical needs. Ministry is not a stained glass word that applies only to those called into professional, those in quotes, Christian work. Ministry means service. Every Christian is called to serve. He has given you unique gifts and opportunities. You are to take what he has given you and use it to serve those with whom he has put you in contact. Matthew summarizes Jesus' ministry by three things in 9:35. He was teaching, proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom, and healing every kind of disease and sickness. Not everyone is gifted to teach publicly, but in private conversation you should be able to teach others what God has taught you from his word. Again, not everyone is called to preach the gospel publicly, but every believer should be ready when the opportunity presents it to tell others how they can have their sins forgiven and go to heaven. Does anyone know what 1 Peter 3:15 says? It basically says, be prepared to make a defense.
Be ready to give an answer.
Jesus also healed the sick, which authenticated his claim to be the promised Messiah. While no one today has a gift of healing, we can pray for the sick and know that God can heal them. We can minister to people's physical needs in practical ways. If we do as Jesus did, we will minister to people's spiritual and physical needs. The importance of sharing the gospel of Christ with those who are lost cannot be overemphasized. Jesus wants everyone to hear the good news of salvation and has provided the gospel as God's power to save all who believe it. Any questions or comments? But what is the most effective way to reach people today, you've been asking? The Institute for American Church Growth asked over 10,000 people this question. What was responsible for your coming to Christ in this church? And you see the replies. 0.5%, which is 0.5%, attended a gospel meeting. Who remembers gospel meetings? Well, you don't hear about those anymore, do you? This is probably the reason why. 1% said, I visited here. 3%, I had a special need, which probably benevolence. Hope Medical Clinic could probably fall under that. I just walked in. I saw the riding by, saw the sign, just walked in. 3% said, I like the programs. 5%, I like the Bible classes. 5% seems low to me, but that's what it is. Don't laugh, you're only 6%, so.
But I am 6.
Yeah. But 79% said a friend or relative invited me. 79%. George Barner, in his book, Grow Your Church from the Outside In, Understanding the Unchurched and How to Reach Them, says the communication method with the best impact is, again, invited by a friend, 63%. So what can we learn from these surveys? The obvious point is this. If churches are to grow, it will be through the efforts of individual members. Preachers, programs, classes may help, but in most cases they will only maintain the size of the congregation. I read another survey that said, 85% of your members who attend Sunday school and worship will still be with you over 5 years, beyond 5 years. Only 15% will stay for 5 years if they don't attend Sunday school. Such congregational efforts are worthwhile because they can reach people with whom we might otherwise never come in contact. But the fact is, the greatest potential lies with those people who have some contact with members of the local congregation. And as Franklin Graham said, let's never miss an opportunity to share the gospel. Any questions or comments? What do y'all think of those statistics? Yes, sir.
I was going to say that, well, the number's big. The invite part, the person says they relative or a friend or just a person.
Yeah.
Invited me.
Yeah.
we as servants have to be known as a guest. Someone's got to, how do you say it? Somebody has to invite you into their space or somehow allow you to deliver.
Allow you to come into their space.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, this is real quick. I had somebody, 15, 20 years ago, from the Catholic church that I attended, walked down the street evangelizing with a Protestant man.
Yeah.
Walked down the street straight to my home, and we invited her in because we knew her, but she was bringing the message in, which was a little bit different.
Yeah.
She actually taught us about with this guy. That basically, here's the word, and this is the open Bible with us in our home, and it was unique.
Yeah.
To see that somebody walked down the street, evangelized, and actually came. They were invited.
Yeah.
We could have said, "Oh no, it's the it's a
Jehovah's Witness,
exactly,
the Mormons." Yeah.
But we saw her, and we invited them in, and then we listened.
If you noticed on your schedule on the front page, one of the later classes, we're going to talk about methods, the different methods. Yeah.
Methods.
And also in a couple of weeks, I'm going to show you, I won't have necessarily have examples to hand out, but I'm going to give you some resources that you can use that are not very, what's the word?
Threatening.
Thank you. Todd?
So I was never really good at inviting people to church.
Yeah.
But the last year or 2 years, I've just started in casual conversation. Something comes up. You should come to our church.
Yeah.
Not preaching to them, not telling them they're going to hell.
Right.
I'm worried for your soul. You should just come to our church.
Yeah.
And actually, since I've started preaching, it's been really easy.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I'm, believe it or not, I'm a preacher. I've actually had more people come to church that I've invited over the last year than I have in the previous 10 years.
Yeah.
And it's been really, and I'm not saying that to say, look at me. It's been really easy.
Because you're doing it.
Just to say, hey, just come to our church.
Yeah.
And most people, even if they're not going to come, they're appreciative that you asked.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
I need my mail. I've only been here, this is my fourth time, and the very first time I met one person at the altar, and then I think I met Bernard.
Did you get a hug?
This one?
Uh-oh. Oh.
After the worship service.
Yeah.
The second time I came, I met Janet Roderick and her daughter Stacy, David, and Dwayne, and her husband. Those are the ones I met.
Okay. You came and get a donut and you were stuck.
So the next, so the last, I don't know if it was last week, I think it was last week, I just got here in time. I was just late because I don't know why, sleeping, I don't know. But anyway, I got here for the Bible, just for the Bible. So every week has been different.
Yeah.
The first one where I predicted myself into going at 9 and staying.
Yeah. You normally get a bookmark from Christy.
I'm able to contact someone.
Yeah.
I'm able to maybe place a vase with a card.
Right.
I'm able to, so that was huge. But I think when people do walk with the Lord, you need to, in whatever spirit you have, it may be a gentle one, it may be a very bored one, it may be, but just make it a point. If they're new in your midst, make it a point to shower them with, well, as the sermon this morning pointed out, you know, you don't want to ignore them. You want to acknowledge them. But a lot of people just want to know that they've been seen.
Yeah.
When they walk in.
Right.
And they're not going to remember everyone's name, and you're not going to remember theirs, maybe. That takes time. But as this sermon pointed out, you know, you want to, they need to want some of this.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so we need to make contact. We need to make eye contact. We need, you know.
That's like the statement earlier, they're not wearing a sign. So we kind of have to seek them out.
Yeah, and you know, and a lot of times when they're new, whether they're just visiting because they're seeking a place, a safe haven.
Yeah.
Because that's what we're all seeking.
Yeah.
Whether they're visiting for that, or whether they're seeking a church to be part of, or they are hurting and have a need, whatever the reason they are here, make some kind of contact.
And we have to step,
remember,
that means we have to step out of our comfort zone to do that.
Oh, yeah.
Bernard, one thing before I forget it, do we still have the little business cards, I think, that Brad used to give out? Y'all know what I'm talking about? You know what I'm talking about? We came up with some little business cards that we just give out to people to kind of help Todd in his thing. Bernard?
I want to thank Cindy, because Cindy is my backup. Mm-hmm. Typically, what I do is when someone tells me that they are local, God, all the time I cannot get everybody's name. So, but if they tell me that they are local and they're visiting, Cindy is always back there. I tell her, she go and try to whatever. But if I can get someone, I say, whoever is doing the welcoming, if someone else could do the backup, to follow up with that, because Cindy sometimes will visit her family. And Christy, I'm sorry, yes, and Christy. But we need some guys, because you know, if there's a guy, I need somebody to go and talk to that person. I don't have that person.
We're so much better at it.
I missed service this morning. I was in a nursery. Just looked your face. But I was told, oh, somebody joined the church today, and she said, she's a lady, and you should meet her. You should make sure you meet her. And we were behind you, and she pointed, there she is. And she said, oh, I should have pointed, but that's okay. So I haven't had that chance yet, but thank you. Welcome. I'm Valeria.
Quick.
Okay, Arizona, I don't know who all has met her, but I just got to talk to her for a minute this morning. Last week, she was in church and Bible class, and I didn't see, she's not keeping Bible class.
No,
is she doing okay?
Arizona.
Okay, I just was wanting to make sure somebody got to talk
to her.
Okay, so what is our motive for getting involved in evangelism? Our motive is the great love of our Savior, who came to this sinful world, who saw the great needs of lost people, who felt compassion for them, and who served them with the good news of salvation. If you have experienced that salvation, then you're one of His workers in His harvest. He wants you to see as He saw, to feel as He felt, and to do as He did, which is love lost people for Jesus' sake. Any final questions real quick?
Bernard, you have a good backup. I'm here because of Cindy. You weren't enough. I'm just kidding. No, I've seen you in action, and I've actually had you been here, and I've had comments say that I am. We're very well greeted and all that. I still don't have your handshake down here.
Okay, next week we're going to tackle the topic, what is evangelism? And your homework is to read Acts 8, 26 through 40. Does anybody know what we're going to be reading next week?
Philip
and the Ethiopian eunuch. Yep. So have a great week and see you next week.